Welcome to the Thrive Podcast with the Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church.
How does your faith kind of play into it, or does it play into it?
What can be done about it?
When I say the church, I'm talking about evangelical white Christians and the black folk who attend their churches.
Hello, welcome to the Thrive Podcast with the Shiloh Missionary Baptist Church. I'm Fred Jeff Smith, pastor of Shiloh, and I'm very happy that you chose to either view this on YouTube or Facebook or listen to us on iTunes, Spotify, or Amazon Prime. As always, we invite your input. We invite your comments and questions. You can reach me at fredjeffsmith@gmail.com. fredjeffsmith@gmail.com. Let us know how we're doing, what things we can do to improve this podcast experience for you. I'm very happy today to welcome to the Thrive Podcast Mr. Corey Smith, who is currently a candidate for the DSCC here in Louisiana. How are you, Mr. Smith?
How you doing, Pastor? It's a pleasure for having me.
Well, I'm grateful for your being able to come and share. Let's start with this. What does DSCC stand for?
The DSCC is the Democratic State Central Committee, and I'm running for District 61. District 61 covers the areas of Parktown, Easytown, Villa Del Rey, Melrose, and over in the areas starting from Winborn and Plank. So if I'm on your ballot, I'm number 10, and I ask for your support and your vote. Early voting is going on right now. Today is the last day of early voting. And as you know, Election Day is on next Saturday, March 23rd.
Yeah. So explain to me exactly what the function of the DSCC is. Assuming that you are elected, what things will you be dealing with? What's your priority list once you get into office?
Once I'm elected to the DSCC, my biggest priority is bringing in the right resources, getting the right Democratic elected officials in office, because a lot of times we elect the same status quo politicians, and they're not really bringing real change into our communities. And so that's the top priority for me, is just bringing equitable resources to our community.
So you want to be a recruiter?
Correct.
Okay.
Because that's really the role of DSCC, is to revitalize the Democratic Party, to make real change, strategic changes. So you work on bringing in the right candidates to run for office, for governor, state rep, and all these other, all the way down to the local seats, because the DSCC also the governing body of the DPEC. So
explain that to
me. Yes, sir.
See, I'm always concerned about acronyms, because not everybody recognizes what the acronyms are.
The DPEC is the EBR, Democratic Party Executive Committee.
Okay.
And what they do is they run the Democratic Party for the local, on a local level.
Okay.
So they are the ones that's responsible for putting together street teams, phone banking teams, fundraisers for your local candidates.
But when you do that, you're doing that in a general basis for the Democratic Party.
Correct.
Not for particular specific Democratic candidates. Is that correct?
Well, they kind of work the same.
Okay.
Because you have a lot of the Democratic candidates who need the support and backing of the party.
Mm-hmm.
And so the party have a lot of resources that your local candidates really just don't have. And if we want to put the right people in office to fight against the change that we really want to see, bring forth the change that we really want to see here in the state, we as a party have to get behind new candidates.
Okay.
Have to build new leadership.
So are you guys are you guys politically neutral, or do you all actually support candidates?
You support candidates. Yes.
So in local politics, I know you're here running for a state office, but in local politics, it was recently announced that Ted James is seeking to run for mayor against the current mayor, Sharon Weston Broome. Both of them are Democrats.
Correct.
What is the role of DPEC with regard to something like that?
Well, the role of DPEC in a situation like that is really to endorse whoever they feel is the best candidate for that seat.
So they will come to you seeking your endorsement, or you will go to them seeking to endorse?
It's a two-way street.
Okay.
Yes, sir. It's a two-way street. And honestly, my priority, to be honest with you, is really to support new change, to support new ideas. It doesn't necessarily mean it's coming from a new politician that's fighting for the seat. But if you can bring forth new resources that our community hasn't seen in over some years, one thing I encourage the voters, if change hasn't happened inside of your household since the last election, it's time to elect a new leader.
So I want to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
When you say you support new change,
correct,
does that mean that you're opposed to incumbency?
I'm not opposed to incumbency if the incumbent is bringing forth change.
Okay.
I'm support.
Differentiate that for me. Because
definitely.
I want it to be clear, because the way you said it, it sounded like you're not really in favor of incumbents.
No, I wouldn't say that. But at the same time, when we're talking about leadership,
mm-hmm,
and when we're talking about building new leaders, you have to be willing to pass the torch.
Okay.
There's no need to build up a generation and say, hey, you can grow up and be whatever it is you want to be, and we're not willing to give them the opportunity to lead.
Okay.
That's what I mean by that. Now, I have nothing against being incumbency.
Okay.
Because at some point in time, I plan to be an incumbent.
I would think so.
I plan to yes. be an incumbent. So I have nothing against incumbency. But as time goes on, as the world continually changing, I want to continually to bring forth new change into our community, bring mm-hmm. forth new resources to our community mm-hmm. to address our current issues,
okay.
not the same issues back from 1986.
From your perspective as a candidate for the DSCC,
mm-hmm.
what do you think went wrong in the most recent gubernatorial election, where Jeff Landry did not just win, but won outright in the open primary, did not even get into a runoff against Mr. Wilson? What in your estimation happened in that particular election?
In my estimation, I would say that the Democratic Party didn't do a good job in focusing on those small towns. I believe we put high focus on cities like New Orleans, Baton Rouge, and Shreveport. But you have those smaller areas, those small rural areas like where I'm from, Bastrop,
mm-hmm.
Where you didn't really see a lot of support for the Democratic candidate.
Mm-hmm.
However, we still have a lot of voters. And I think the Democratic Party just have to do a better job with galvanizing support in those small rural areas.
From what I have read, and I don't have statistics in front of me, something like 80% of eligible black voters in this state are registered to vote. But in the most recent gubernatorial election, only about 25%, and my numbers could be a little off, but 25-26% of black voters actually voted. And not all of that 25% voted Democrat. Some of them voted for Mr. Landry.
Mm-hmm.
Small amount, but still a significant amount of black Democrats. And I know that I'm not trying to suggest that black means Democrat and Democrat means black.
Right.
But most blacks are Democrat in
Correct.
This state. What do you account for the lack of motivation for people to go to the polls? I've heard people use the excuse about football games and homecoming and all of this other kind of stuff. But early voting took
yeah.
place long before
Correct.
That. So I don't buy that as an excuse. From my perspective, there was just a lack of enthusiasm for the Democratic candidate. It's like the field was set for him, one Democratic candidate running with the endorsement of the outgoing governor of the state, against this field of Republicans, and yet one Republican emerges as the outright winner in an open primary. What do you think accounts for the lack of motivation among black voters to actually go out and vote, even though they were registered?
What I think accounts for the lack of motivation for black voters to go out there and vote is really that they really not seeing any change inside of their communities. The same candidates are running for office, and once their term limit is over, they run for another seat in a higher capacity.
Well, now, Sean Wilson is not the same candidate.
Now, but
Sean Wilson is a new candidate. Yeah.
But by the time Sean ran, the voters are disengaged. The voters are not motivated to go out and vote anymore because they feel like it's not going to bring forth any change, real change in their communities, inside of their household. It helps Sean Wilson. It helps the state say, yes, we have a Democratic governor, a black governor, but what does that do for me and my family? And if the voter doesn't believe that change is going to trickle down inside their household, they're not motivated to get in their cars and go vote on election day.
So how do you combat that?
How do I combat that?
Yeah.
Really, you have to really start early on. I start early on a high school level. I guess with me being a teacher, I try to educate the students now to let them know that they've not only that their vote counts, but their vote is very important. And if you really want to bring forth change, you have to work to get the right candidates elected. Whoever's running on a platform that aligns with your beliefs, aligns with your moral compass, that's the only way it's going to work. We have to donate to these campaigns because running a campaign isn't cheap. And even if we believe in a candidate's mission, if we have $5 to make a difference to that campaign, let's make those contributions. And I think, like I say, every little bit counts. So if you can make some phone calls, go knock on some doors, that is how we can be active, proactive, and getting the right people in office.
You don't believe, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to push back a little bit.
Right.
The specter of a Jeff Landry becoming governor of the state of Louisiana, where 33%, 34% of the electorate is black. You don't believe that there should have been motivation just in that reality, knowing what Jeff Landry didn't run as a novice. He ran with a record. He ran as attorney general. And as attorney general, he was oppositional to anything having to do with social justice issues. He was oppositional to anything having to do with Democratic politics. He spent more of his time bringing lawsuits against the Biden administration than he did to do anything substantive for the people who actually reside in the state of Louisiana. You don't think that the specter of a Jeff Landry governorship should have been enough to motivate Democrat and black voters to go to the polls?
I think it was more than enough to motivate them. However, it didn't.
And I'm asking why. I agree with you, it didn't. But my question is why? What is it that Mr. Wilson and I didn't think Mr. Wilson was the best candidate, just right between me and you, but he was the candidate.
Correct.
What do you think was so unacceptable in a Sean Wilson candidacy that people would prefer to stay home and gift Jeff Landry with the governor's office?
It's just a lack of trust in the entire process. I don't think it had anything to do with Sean Wilson personally. It's that the voters just are disengaged from the process. It doesn't matter if Obama would have ran at this time. I don't think it would have motivated voters to get out and vote. And the reason why I say that is because they're not seeing the change coming inside their household because they witnessed it under several different administrations and nothing has changed. So they are more focused on, let me build my own reality. Let me build my own, change my own circumstance for myself and not focus more on government.
Well, if that's the way that they feel, it sounds to me like you have a real uphill battle.
I agree.
Once you get into office to motivate them to come back,
I agree,
into the political process. So if I were to ask you to give me a list, a priority list, a tick list, 1, 2, 3, what would be the top three priorities that you think would bring people back into the political process?
Number one, we'll have to educate. We have to educate our voters.
Educate them on?
I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
We have to educate our voters on, number one, where we are now from them not going out to vote.
Okay.
I don't think a lot of people understand the consequences. Now, you're starting to hear it now about what Jeff Landry is putting into play from the special sessions. And now people are saying that I really should have voted. I really should have participated mm-hmm. in this last government election. Mm-hmm. Now, if they don't understand the consequences of their actions of not voting, we won't ever get them to go back out to the polls. We have to, number one, do something about the party list, like the voter list, because we have to purge the list some type of way, clean the records up, because we have a lot of people on the list of Secretary of State that's listed as voters mm-hmm. that, honestly, a lot of people are dead. There's a lot of people that moved out of the state, out of the districts. We need to clean that record up so we can really get in contact with the voters, opposed to calling bad numbers and not having the correct addresses to connect with the voters. We need to really be able to get the message out to the voters. So we have to do something about that record, cleaning okay. that record up.
So number one is education. Number two is cleaning up the voter rolls.
Correct.
What would be number three?
Identifying good candidates to run for office.
All right. You've hit my spot now.
Identifying good candidates to run for office.
Why do Democrats have such a scant bench, such a scant reservoir of potential candidates to run for office, whether it be local, parish, or statewide? In your estimation?
In my estimation, it would simply be resources. When you have new candidates who really have great ideas, they don't have the support. They don't have the political backing. They don't have the financial support to really put up a good fight. And you have a lot of people encourage them saying, why would you run against that incumbent? And it's nothing wrong with the incumbent, but it's the people's seat. And so long as you focus on the people and doing what's best for the people, I don't think we should focus more on if we're running against an incumbent or not. So I think that's one of the biggest things we need to focus on.
Federal courts have said that the state legislature, well, the congressional seats have to be reapportioned.
Mm-hmm.
And the state legislature met and they did do reapportionment at Governor Landry's behest. Go ahead and give the devil his due. Hi, Mr. Governor. How you doing? They went on and did that. Now there's a group of 12 or so whites that have brought a lawsuit against the newly drawn district saying that their civil rights have been infringed upon because the lines have been drawn solely due to race. They're opposed to that. Do you have an opinion as to whether or not the newly drawn congressional map is going to survive this lawsuit, or do you think that it's going to have to go back and be changed yet again? And how much time is that going to take with the upcoming election being in November? We definitely don't have
a lot of time.
Right.
I would hope that the newly drawn map will stay as is, because it gives us a fighting chance to have more representation, to have a bigger voice.
Mm-hmm.
And do I think? I think the 12 people who filed the lawsuit have all right to do just that
mm-hmm.
and let the courts decide.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as my stance on the matter, I support the newly drawn map. I support us having a second black congressional seat.
Mm-hmm.
I support it.
I agree with the second seat. I don't know why people can't do basic math. if you're 33% of the electorate and you have six seats, well, one third of six is two.
Correct.
So, you know, I did go to Baton Rouge High.
I support an additional black congressional seat as well.
Well, nothing precludes blacks from running in these other seats.
Correct.
To my surprise, I did not know that you did not have to live in a particular district in order to run for that district seat on a Congress level. That came as news to me with the prospect of Garrett Graves running mm-hmm. for a different seat than the one he currently occupies. But I'm just curious as to what the DSCC is doing in order to ensure that the new map remains the map and that this matter is settled as quickly as possible so that there is no question about the upcoming election. They did this a little while ago when the state legislature balked on reapportionment mm-hmm. to make sure that they kept the number of congressional seats in 22. Well, 24 is now. And I just think that something needs to be done to make sure that the new map becomes the map and we can take new off of it and people have to run according to that map. Has that been under discussion in Democratic circles about what we can do to support the map as is?
Well, I won't sit up here and tell a lie to you, sir. That I don't know. I haven't been a part of those conversations. I do pray that those conversations have been taking place. Mm-hmm. I do support whatever measures that will keep the newly drawn map the same.
I understand that there's also a move to reapportion state Supreme Court maps to allow for a second black majority district. Does the DSCC take a position on that as well?
The DSCC will really, they take a position on supporting any Democratic candidate. So it doesn't really matter what seat it is, as long as you're a Democrat. But
you do have a concern about fairness, right?
Yes,
of course. And gerrymandered districts.
Of course.
So it's not a ridiculous question to think that somewhere they're having discussions about how these lines are being drawn.
Yes. I know since I'm not currently on the DSCC, mm-hmm. I don't want to speak and say what they are doing or not doing when it comes to having those type of conversations. I will hope that they are having those conversations and looking out for the future of the party and the future of the state in its totality. So whether that's on the local level, city councilman, up to the Supreme Court level.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to decide that you wanted to run for the DSCC? How did you make that decision?
Really just coming to the decision that we're not really seeing real change in our local politics. We're not really bringing in people who are still a part of the same status quo, a part of the same political circles. And their main focus are to grow really self-interest, their business, their friends' businesses, and change isn't coming into our communities. So me offering myself to public service is really just second nature to me because I've always been a leader in every room that I walked into regardless in title or not, being a leader is something that you're born a leader. And that's I'm just here offering myself to serve.
It sounds like you're up to speed on the issues that exist within our community, and that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I'm asking you, was there a particular issue that moved you from being spectator to saying, oh, no, it's time for me to jump into this and make some actual changes? Because all of us are spectators.
All of us sit around and
complain about what needs to be done. But very few people actually take the initiative to say, well, I'm going to offer myself to do this. And I'm curious as to what particular issue or set of issues caused you to say, all right, I'm going to stop being a spectator. I'm going to go out.
And get on the front line and fight.
Yeah.
Talking to the people in the community. Just talking to the people in the community about their concerns, their issues, and finding out what works best to to make our life, our quality of life better. And I've always been that person for it, saying, you know, I can offer suggestions, but I'd rather be on the forefront to try to execute the plan. And that's what made me decide to run for office. I've been a teacher for 10 years now.
Okay, where do you teach?
Right now, I'm teaching at Helix Aviation by the airport. Yes, okay. Sir. But I started off teaching at a superintendent's academy back in 2013.
Okay.
And just knowing that the future of Baton Rouge, teaching, educating those future leaders, mm-hmm. being standing in front of them every day saying that, hey, you can grow up and be whatever it is you want to be, and seeing them being presented with issues from on a family level, mm-hmm. outside of the classroom. I want to fight. I fought for them in the classroom. I fought for them at the faculty meetings. Now I want to fight for them on a family level. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to always offer myself in any capacity that I can.
You teach at Helix.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a proponent of charter schools.
Am I a proponent of charter schools? Yes, yeah. I am.
What's your argument for charter schools?
Really?
I mean, they exist. They exist, and
they're not going anywhere.
But I'm just curious, what's your argument in favor of charter schools? I'm pragmatic. I know they're here. I mm-hmm. don't see them going anywhere. But I'm not a huge fan of charter schools. And as far as I'm concerned, their track record has not been stellar.
Yeah.
At least not in this state.
Correct.
I can't speak for what happens in other states. But in this state, charter schools have not shown themselves to educate our children at a superior level to regular schools. So I'm asking you, as someone who teaches in
a charter school system,
and
yes.
is a proponent of charter schools, what's your argument in favor of charter schools?
It's really about bringing in the right resources inside that school setting. The one thing about charter schools is non-traditional. Mm-hmm. So you're allowed to teach in non-traditional ways. Every child learns differently.
I agree.
And so one thing that some of the charter school system that I've been a part of, again, every system is 100% different.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I say, one common factor that they all have was trying to tend to the individual learning needs of the child. Really, they try to take on more of the financial responsibility for as like providing school supplies, uniforms, and those things for the child, where the parent don't really have to invest in that part of it.
Doesn't that take place in regular neighborhood schools as well, though?
It does, because in every city you're gonna have a back to school giveaway,
right?
So you're gonna so
2,000 of them, to be
right?
Exact.
More than
yeah.
I've done several of them myself, yeah. So you're gonna always have that in place. But those usually take place one time of the year, usually in July or August,
right?
Now, and those organizations, they provide in resources throughout the year from August to May.
Mm-hmm.
They also, a lot of them provide after school cares, summer school camps for the student body that's enrolled in their schools.
Mm-hmm.
So those type of things I do support. Now, do I support taking away resources from the neighborhood schools, because we do need the public school systems. I do support the public school system, the neighborhood schools, the traditional schools as well. So it's not, I support the charter. I'm pro-charter because I make more money in a charter school system. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. So if the private sector, the private schools or the public schools pay teachers more, I would be open to working with them as well.
So you're sitting here telling me
I'm going to be 100% honest with you.
You favor charter schools is because they pay you better.
Yes, that's why I work at them, because they pay me more money. Now, I think we need to pay our teachers more money across the board.
But it has nothing to do with the child, because children aren't learning any better at a charter school in this state than they are. And I'm not speaking to your individual school, because
I would say it would be individual classrooms.
Charter schools mm-hmm. in Louisiana don't fare any better than neighborhood schools as far as grades are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they give each school a letter grade.
Right.
Charter schools are D and F schools, just like neighborhood schools are D and F schools. You have a good charter school, it's a C. You don't have too many charter schools that are A and B level schools. So why am I supposed to favor charters under those circumstances? And when you come back at me with the argument that, well, I get paid better because I'm out of charter school, that doesn't help me.
That doesn't help you. It doesn't help you at all. But also, I do want you to understand that just because a school is rated a D or F, you also need to take the time out and go visit those schools to see is really learning going on inside of the school. A lot of times when it comes to those standardized testing, one of my biggest argument is a calendar, a testing schedule issue. When you're dealing with children that have to take certain standardized tests back to back, the ANET testing, NWEA, followed by the LEAP testing, mm-hmm. if you're taking them weeks back to back, the child gonna pick one.
Mm-hmm.
And whichever one that they pick, that's the only one that they're gonna show growth on. That's the only one they're gonna succeed on. And the other ones, they're going to just mark anything on and go to sleep. It's not a true reflection of the learning that's taking place inside of the classroom.
Then why is there not more pushback against
standardized testing?
Against standardized testing on the state level? Kate Brumley is a huge proponent mm-hmm. of standardized testing. And he now has a governor who's going to back anything and everything that he wants to do.
Right.
But standardized tests, I mean, the most recent thing is if you can't pass an exit exam, you don't get a diploma. And there are no alternatives to that reality with mm-hmm. this new governor in place, which means
correct.
The kids are going to be coming out of school frustrated, angry, and they're not going back, and they won't even have the basics of a high school diploma to go out and get a job. Why is there not push instead of charter schools just saying, well, just give me mine, don't worry about anybody else, why is there not organized pushback against that kind of educational policy that is working against people who are not doing well? You just say it. That children learn at different paces and on
correct.
Different levels and in
correct.
Different ways. And I certainly agree with that. Then somebody ought to be advocating for these children that if I can't pass a standardized test, that does not mean that I have not achieved a certain level of learning that allows me to get a high school diploma.
And I believe as the role as a member on the DSEC, that's where we need to find the right candidates to run for the BSEE board. So they can have that fight who believe the same thing that we just stated right here, that we need accountability across the board for all people, not just saying that we are going to hold the school accountable and give them an A or B, but we also need to make sure that we are not testing the children in a manner that they're not going to be able to showcase their growth. They're not going to be able to demonstrate that they are really learning on a daily basis. Now, we have these small assessment exit tickets that you can really see that the child learned the standards in the classroom for that day. The teachers go back and do a reteach. If a percentage of the students don't learn whatever standard is that's put out, mm-hmm. they go back and do a reteach to make sure that whoever didn't learn it get that information, try to close the gap in some form or fashion. But you won't be able to see that on the LEAP test. You won't be able to. One thing I've been teaching my children right now is the 12 powerful words, because a lot of times we give these standardized tests to children. And we don't teach them how to decode the questions, how to deconstruct the writing prompts, how to understand what the words explain mean. So they don't really get what the question is actually telling them. So they can't properly answer them in the right manner. And one thing I tell my students all the time is that although when I grade your work, I know what you mean. I might can give you grace, but when it comes out to the people in accountability who's going to be grading your LEAP exam, they don't know you. So you have to be able to be clear, concise at all times. And I don't think we are really putting people on the BSEE board. We're not really putting people on the school boards that have the same sentiments. I believe a lot of times some candidates are joining certain roles. I'm not talking about locally, mm-hmm. but when we're talking about joining some roles like the school board or to catapult their political careers, mm-hmm. and the children are the ones that are suffering the most. So as your DSCC member, I will be held with the charge to make sure that we're bringing in, putting the right candidates in office on the BESSE board, on the local school boards, that's going to fight for our children, to understand that we need to look at those testing calendars. We need to look at, are we teaching children how to decode, deconstruct writing prompts and questions the right way, that's going to really show growth. And we also need to highlight the small assessment growths. The same way we highlight the LEAP standard data, we need to highlight the data that the children showing success in the classroom every single day. I attend data meetings every single Monday where I can tell you, and I can show you, I can go to my car and show you that there are the children in the city are learning. I worked at schools like Geo Prep Mid-City, who's number two in the state, who's shown that they are a top game school. And there are other charter schools that are blue ribbon schools here in the city of Baton Rouge as well. Are all schools perfect? No, but truth be told, all the students are the same, because they are the ones that are moving from school to school, from charter to public. They're the same group of kids. It's the same population of kids. So it's not so much that is the changing factor. The changing factor is changing policies, and that really benefit the population of kids that we are dealing with.
Do charters require their instructors to be certified?
Not all charters. Every charter school system is different.
Does your charter
require? My charter school system, the one that I'm at this year, yes. does not. They require you to be a part of a charter, a certification program. I'm personally is certified in project-based learning, Quest for Success. So every teacher there have
How
some type of certification.
How can there be a fair assessment, an equal assessment of instruction, if not everyone is required to attain the same level of certification?
Because I've known some certified teachers. I've been in spaces with some certified teachers, and I've been in the spaces with some teachers who have no certification, who just mastered in their field. If you have a master's degree in mathematics, but you have a bachelor's degree in therapeutic rec, but you are certified to teach mathematics, the person that have the master's in mathematics also have a skill set and able to teach the child as well, with or without their certification.
The East Baton Rouge Parish School System requires that all of their teachers be certified.
Correct, or in a certification program.
So why should I be spending tax dollars, local or state tax dollars, to support schools that have people in places of instruction who don't have the same level of certification?
Because we go to churches. We go to churches with preachers who don't have degrees in theology.
That's equivocation. And I have a master's.
No, I'm not talking about you personally. No, I'm saying.
But my point is, right. The church is an entity that does not receive state dollars.
Correct.
Or state taxes in
true.
Order to operate.
That's true.
Individual members decide whether or not they want to be a part of a church. Charter schools are funded by the state of Louisiana.
Correct.
And they are taking dollars, whether you oppose it or not, they are taking dollars from neighborhood schools in order to provide that funding.
Right.
And they're saying that your dollars are better spent in these charter schools than they will be in the neighborhood schools, because the parents just know what's better for their children. But the parents want to send their children where their children can get out.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily succeed.
Right.
Get out.
Correct.
And if you're being taught by people who don't have any certification to teach,
mm-hmm.
then they're going to get out, because you're going to make sure they get out.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that they've learned anything.
Right, and I think that's going to boil down.
So my go back to my original question. How can you fairly
mm-hmm.
judge apples to beef? It's not even in the same family.
Right.
If I say apples to oranges, at least they're both fruit. How can you compare apples to beef or to potatoes? They're not at all the same thing. And yet we are saying that the dollar spent for a potato is the same thing as a dollar that's spent for an apple. A dollar that's spent for, get rid of the analogy, a dollar that's spent for non-certified instruction right. is the same as a dollar that's spent for certified instruction. I don't see how we can arrive at that conclusion. And I'm asking you, as someone who works in a charter school, what's your response to that?
My response is simply is that I truly don't know all the ins and outs of the funding sources of the charter schools. Now, a lot of the charter schools that I've worked for have also been backed by businesses. So they had a lot of additional dollars and a lot of additional funding sources that the regular school just didn't have.
What, pray tell, is the goal of a business?
To make money.
Not to educate.
Profit, correct.
To make money.
Correct.
Okay. You said what I expected.
It's all a profit. It's a business for certain.
The governor is touting education savings accounts where parents can take dollars from the state education fund and carry them to any school of their choice. It's being touted in the legislature right now. I was reading today's paper as we're recording this. Saturday, March 16th, the Advocate has an article on its front page talking about these education savings accounts and what has happened in other states that have adopted similar type programs where the cost of education has actually skyrocketed, has blown up state budgets as a result. And there is no evidence that education has improved as a result of this.
The additional dollar.
Why is it that public education was great until 1954? and since 1954, we have spent all of our time, effort, and money trying to unravel public education. As a nation, I'm asking you as somebody who's a candidate, I'm asking you as someone who's an educator, what is your belief as to what happened in 1954 to make public education just a terrible thing in the minds of so many people?
Oh, man, that's a great question. But I'm going to be honest and answer it. I'm going to be extremely honest with you and transparent. Brown versus the Board of Education probably was one of the worst things that happened to the black learner. When we talk about equality,
yes,
and we talk about equity,
yes,
in education,
yes.
And when we had, before we integrated, we had more of a sense of community. It was a stronger sense of community where the teachers, even the black teachers at that time, they understood the assignment. They understood that the importance of educating the children and gaining the skill set to really fight, have a fighting chance in America. Today, the students are more removed from those experiences. Recently, I taught the lesson on the Baton Rouge bus boycott. Mm-hmm. And my students had no earthly idea what took place in the city that they was born and raised in. Mm-hmm. And I think having teachers to teach them and connect them back with things like that, incidents like that, will build the value that they place on education. I think that will also help us with, far as is building our community. Now, back in 1954, we had that sense of community. We just don't have that now. Now we have more of one. I'm looking out for me. You look out for you. I tell people all the time, drive-by teaching is worse than a drive-by shooting. Because you have a lot of teachers, and one thing I will say, the disadvantage in the charter world, not only in the charter world, in the public school system as well, you have a lot of teachers that are in place that are only teaching to get to their next gig, to finish graduate school, to finish medical school, to finish whatever the next thing that's on their agenda. Mm-hmm. And so when you have teachers that are invested in that way, they will pass the students socially, social promotion. That's one thing I teach my students. You don't want to be a victim of social promotion, mm-hmm. because at the end of the day, there's an opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. And if you don't gain all of the knowledge and the skill sets that you need to obtain here, it's only going to hurt you in the long run. It's only going to hurt the generational curses that you desire to break for you and your family. Mm-hmm.
So I want to go back to what you said because I want to be clear on it. Mm-hmm. You said that Brown versus Board of Education was one of the worst things that happened to black learners. Mm-hmm. Do you mean the outcome of it?
Correct.
Or the actual decision itself?
When I say the part that I say was bad for black people, mm-hmm. was trying to integrate with the other race, and it changed, we lost the sense of community.
States were forced to get rid of the separate but equal, mm-hmm. policy, which meant that states had to decide where they were going to spend their dollars.
Right.
And they decided that it was less costly to integrate schools rather than to equally fund
two separate school systems.
And so that's how integration evolved, mm-hmm. from Brown v. Board of Education. I happen to agree with you that a lot was lost as a result of blacks being merged with whites in the classroom, because I believe that whenever there's a merger that takes place, somebody gets submerged.
Correct.
And it happens to be, by and large, us that got submerged in this process. That being said, I don't agree with you that the initiative was wrong. I think that the way in which it has played itself out is wrong. This proliferation of parochial and private schools that white folks went to is because of Brown versus Board of Education. This explosion of church-based schools is because of Brown versus Board of Education. This now thrust towards voucher programs and charter schools is all a result of Brown versus Board of Education, because white people do not want to send their children to school with black children.
Right.
They for whatever reason, they don't feel like that's something that would be beneficial to their child. Now, they have the right to do with their children whatever they want, but they don't have the right to do it at my child's expense.
Correct.
They don't have the right to do it at my expense. So if you want to have a private school, which in this state, they blew up everywhere. That's why Episcopal and Catholic, mm-hmm. and Parkview Baptist and all of these other schools exist, then pay for it. And quit asking the state to pay for your choice of private school. And that's all that this education savings account that Governor Landry is promoting, and that's going to pass through the legislature, that's all it is. It's saying that I have to pay for you to send your child to a private school. Read the article. Parents who make $100,000 a year and are currently paying for private school are going to have access to these voucher dollars to supplement their own incomes in order to send their children to private schools at essentially no cost to them, but at a tremendous cost to the child in Easytown, where you're running, and in Eden Park, where you're running, and on Winburn Avenue, where you're running. And again, my question is, where's the pushback to this coming from the Democratic Party? In what room is this being discussed? And what's the outcome of that discussion?
And that's the reason why I'm running, so we can have those discussions in the necessary rooms.
So you're saying currently no discussions are
taking place? I'm not saying that no discussions are taking place, but since we don't know of those discussions and I haven't seen any plans coming from those, being made from those discussions, I haven't been invited to be a part of any of those discussions. I'd rather join the party, get in the seat, and start those conversations myself.
Are you suggesting that there is lack of transparency?
I'm not suggesting it. I'm saying it. Okay. It is a lack of transparency and a lack of accountability. So my job, my role is to make sure we incorporate both transparency and accountability in our state party.
Are you a church person?
I am.
Okay.
I am born and raised.
Okay.
Church of God in Christ.
Wonderful. that's fine. What role does your faith play in your decision to offer yourself for public service?
Everything. Honestly, just being 100% transparent with you, I pray about everything, and I ask God for guidance, and I only want the portion that God has for me. And that's one thing I've been telling the people on this campaign trail. I only want to be in the spaces that God has for me. If I asked God, when I ran, my first time running for office was in 2016.
Okay.
And I didn't win. And I asked God, I said, Lord God, if this isn't for me, take away the desire to be a public servant. Because I could always offer service. I don't need a title. Mm-hmm. I don't need a seat to do the work. Mm-hmm. So if this is not something that you have for me, Lord God, remove the desire. And he never did. He actually, God constantly kept sending reminders of the plan. You know, one of my favorite scriptures, Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plan that I have for you. Mm-hmm. And God has always sent a prophet or somebody to reignite that vision, that burning fire that he placed deep down inside of me. I do believe all of this has been predestined long before I was placed in my mother's womb. And I Jesus came to be a service. I'm here to do the same.
You're from North Louisiana.
That's correct.
You're from Bastrop. Been down here for a while?
Since 2008. August 2nd, 2008.
Southern brought you down here? LSU brought you down
Southern,
here?
Southern University.
Southern University brought you down here, and you decided to stay.
That's correct.
What's the primary difference to you between living in North Louisiana and living here in South Central Louisiana?
What's the difference?
Yeah.
Culturally, there's a big difference.
Okay.
I believe... Well, we're country, where I'm from, mm-hmm. So it's a lot slower. You have a lot more, well, from my upbringing, I've witnessed a lot more, a sense of community, far as the people was, your neighbors had a lot of hands-on in your upbringing. They could have been the same here as well, I just wasn't born and raised here. Mm-hmm. I didn't move here till I got to college, and I do believe I grew up in Baton Rouge as well.
Okay.
Because I came here as a young, naive 18-year-old who just had an outlook on life where I just wanted to learn and grow. I started off as an intern, and because my degree is in political science, and I needed to know what could I do with a political science degree in the event that I fell out of law school or choose not to go to law school, whatever the case may be, what can I do with this degree in political science? Mm-hmm. And so I asked Professor Smith, Professor Blanche Smith at Southern University, place me with an elected official. I need to be with an elected official. And at that time, I was placed with C. Denise Marcel, who was the city councilwoman of District 7. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much. Starting off as an intern, then after I was the intern, I became her legislative assistant. And even after I stopped being a legislative assistant, I trained a lot of her different assistants after me, and I worked in conjunction on a whole bunch of different community projects. Mm-hmm. I learned how to service a community. As an intern, I met myself for the first time because I learned that you could have, I personally could be going through so many different things in my personal life. However, when it was a father that came in from the community who had six children, who was looking for a job, and they just couldn't find a job, nobody would hire them, and they was facing eviction, being that person in place to find a solution, contacting at that time Catholic Charities or whoever the other community partners to resolve the issue, that made me me. And from that moment back in, that had to be 2010, 2011, mm-hmm. I learned this is who made Corey Corey. And I ran for office the first time in 2016. And
what office did you run for?
City Council.
Okay.
Back then, it was District 12.
Okay.
And I tell people all the time, me losing that election was the best thing that ever happened to me. My father ended up dying the week before election day, and so I spent all the funds that I normally would donate to my campaign, I spent on my father's funeral. And my mother ended up dying 2 months later. My mother and my father was together for 40 years. My mom just really couldn't live on this earth without my dad. And I wasn't fit to be a leader at that time. I wasn't fit to lead the city forward by no means. Mm-hmm. But what I did do, I stayed consistent in my service. I started a nonprofit called ROCK, Reaching Out to Community Kin, where we help families and individuals that's battling kidney disease, help them with resources from a host of different things, from utility assistance to rental assistance. Mm-hmm. And just advocated for kidney health, because I noticed there was a lot of organization that was in place that catered to domestic violence, HIV, AIDS, and all these different things, but everybody knew somebody that was on dialysis. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to continue to be a resource to the community, to the family, to the people that suffered from the same thing that my family dealt with.
So you've been here now for 16 years.
Correct.
Do you have any plans that might take you away from Baton Rouge or away from Louisiana? I generally ask people who are guests here, do they want to plant their flag here? Do they want their children to live here? Do you have kids?
No, I don't have any kids, okay. But I do want to start and build a family here in the city of Baton Rouge.
Okay, and when your children come of age, I know it's their choice, not yours, would you be happy if your children decided that they wanted to live here in Baton Rouge?
Yes, because I want to work to bring in the necessary resources where them living here in Baton Rouge, that wouldn't even be an issue, because whatever they need will be presently here.
Okay. If I were to ask you to make your campaign pitch, and I guess I'm doing that now, look right at that camera and explain to people why they should vote for Corey Smith for DSCC.
How you doing, Baton Rouge? I'm Corey Smith, and I'm your candidate for the Democratic State Central Committee of District 61. I just ask for your support. I ask for your vote. Today is the last day of early voting. If change has not happened inside of your household since the last election, I ask that you vote for a new leader, somebody that's accessible to you, somebody that's visible, somebody that's fighting for you and your family. I can't do it without your support. And most importantly, I can't do it without your vote. Remember, I'm number 10 on your ballot. Thank you.
Corey Smith, DSCC candidate, educator, Thank you for taking the time to come and share with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for viewing. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again next time.